It's the Skinny Podcast, only on Local12.com. Now, here's Richard Skinner, joined by Chad Brendel of BearcatJournal.com and Rick Roaring from MusketeerReport.com.
And welcome into the podcast for this Friday. I'm Richard Skinner, Local12.com digital sports columnist and editor, along with Rick Roaring from Musketeer Report. And Chad Brendel, a happy Chad Brendel this morning from Bearcat Journal. And we got a lot to talk about. Big game this weekend for Xavier, Kentucky and UCLA, and which should be a fun game as well. Indiana suffered an injury off of their game the other night with North Carolina. But we have to start with what took place last night in Ames, Iowa, in the beautiful Hilton Coliseum, where the UC Bearcats, it was not pretty, Chad Brendel, but it was a game that if you're looking to pad the resume in any way, shape, or form when the season's over with, UC, we'll talk about the aesthetics of it as we roll along, trust me, because I think all three of us weren't pleased with the aesthetics of that game. But to win in that environment, in a place that's hard to win, against a team that's probably going to have a pretty good season and help your resume, that was one you almost had to have.
Yeah, it wasn't, you know, I don't like must wins, quote unquote, on December 1st. But as we talked about on Monday, if you're building your resume, you missed out on a huge opportunity by not beating Rhode Island and playing Duke. You had at Iowa State, at Butler coming up. You had to split. And now you're kind of playing with house money next Saturday going to Butler. And if you can win both of those, then all of a sudden you're in incredible position for, you know, when the selection committee gets together in March.
Yeah,
so it's a huge win.
Yeah, as long as you hold serve in the league and don't mess up in the league, and you wouldn't expect this team to mess up too badly in that league. There'll be a couple of losses, but
bumps in the road,
but you don't expect them to mess up that badly. Let's talk about the impressions of the win, because it would have been a tough way to lose. You know, they throw one in at the end. You know, you play that hard.
It was down and out, man.
Yeah, it was. I mean,
Cincinnati sports fans are not trained to think that ball is going out.
Absolutely right.
Like, everyone thought that was going.
It was online. Like.
Yep.
It was
perfect. Rimmed out.
The guy hadn't scored all game.
Yeah. Like, it would have perfect. Yeah, it would have been apropos for them, no question about it. But, again, the defense saved the day for UC, and that's been the mantra over the years. I mean, I'll go back. The offense was ugly to watch both sides. I thought it was, honestly, to some degree at times, terrible basketball to watch offensively. But I will say this, you go on the road and you go 3 of 20 from three-point range. I think they were, 32% overall, 33% overall for the game shooting the ball, and still win. That's still big.
It's huge, and, you know, it came down to a couple things. One, they dominated Iowa State on the glass.
By 12, right?
Yeah, by 12, and it was even worse in the first half. Iowa State didn't have an offensive rebound in the first half, and that's a big part of what they do offensively is attack the glass. They're, you know, they fly all over the place, and they're very aggressive. Gary Clark and Kyle Washington and those guys did a great job. Really, for the first time all season, I thought, getting on a body, finding somebody, and boxing them out and keeping Iowa State off the offensive glass. I thought that really changed the way that Iowa State wanted to play or was able to play the game because they couldn't get that going. And then the thing that really jumped out to me is Iowa State, you know, Monte Morris averages 6.5 assists a game. It's a team that generally shares the ball really well. They have 5 assists.
Yeah, 5 for the game. That's incredible. He had 2.
And I mean, that... What they forced him into isolation. They didn't allow him to get playing down. I mean, he still had some plays because they run so many ball screens. He's going to get a couple looks, but they kept that team in isolation the entire night and really took them out of anything they wanted to do and made them look terrible offensively.
Yeah, basically the first time he split a trap, he had Jaron Cumberland coming to help across the lane on the zone. He
didn't go well.
Exploded his hips. Jaron didn't play the rest of the game, and somehow Monte Morris didn't really seem to get in the lane much after that.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting. The rebounding thing was so huge. 16-7 second chance points. When that's something Iowa State usually relies on. What did you guys think about what happened? Because in the first half, even though it wasn't good offense, I thought both teams were running their stuff. They were going through. Iowa State was trying to push the tempo the way they like to play a little more. UC was keeping them from doing that. Did both teams just push on each other and fight so hard in the first half and work so hard defensively that they wore themselves out?
I thought both teams were dead towards the end of regulation. And the overtime
16,
came to a crawl.
16 minutes left in the second half, Skinny. I started texting Chad. Both teams were crawling up the floor and just running nothing. They were just passing the ball to the wing and slow cuts across the away, and it was nothing.
Well, let me give you some perspective. I mean, Jacob Evans played 42 minutes. Copain played 42 minutes. Kevin Johnson played 39. Gary Clark played 37. And Kyle Washington played 31. So your five starters played 30-plus minutes.
They got almost nothing from the bench.
Correct. Absolutely correct. Nothing.
For Iowa State, Monte Morris played 39. The Metru Long kid played 37. Matt
Scoreless.
Thomas played 35. Yeah, it was 0 for 7 from the field. Deontay Burton, the big body guy, played 30. And Daryl Bowie off the bench played 36. So they had five guys over 30. I mean, that's a lot of minutes at this point in the year to be playing without much help. And don't forget, Kyle Washington looked like he was dragging a leg, or at least some part
of
his body.
Jacob looked a little bit as well.
End. Yeah, so you had two guys that were kind of gimping around there as well. But you're right, it looked like from about the midway point of the second half, it was, all right, who's going to survive? It's like two punch-drunk boxers standing in the middle of the ring. Which one's going to fall first?
The interesting part is you would think Deontay Burton had foul trouble early in the first half. You would have thought in the second half he would have been the one that was a little bit rested and really could have, you know, gave them a lift.
He gave them really nothing.
And Gary Clark pretty much dominated him. I mean, in terms of defensively, Gary Clark did not allow him to get going at all.
I think he had one stick back in the second half.
Yeah.
I mean, he might have had another bucket. I remember he had one stick back, but he really was pretty non-existent.
No. Jacob Evans was on him a little bit, like I thought might happen, and they really did a great job taking him out of his game.
Well, and we had talked about that on the last podcast where we were like, you know, I had even said the fact that I think it comes down to which Gary Clark do you get versus which Deontay Burton do you get, but we were under the impression that Gary Clark might not even play. And
right.
Then he plays, and he outplays Deontay Burton, and that, I mean, that was a great sign for UC. If you win that matchup, then it basically comes down to the rest of your guys versus Monte Morris.
Right. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Because those are their two playmakers. No. The rest of their guys are solid, but those are their two guys.
Right.
I want to touch on two instances at the end of the game, one at the end of regulation and one at the end of the game. The end of regulation, UC is still down, came up with an empty trip. Time is winding down. You see Mick Cronin run to midcourt. It was hard for Rick and I talked on the phone about it. It was hard to see if Mick was signaling to foul or signaling to trap. They ended up trapping, so that must have been the signal. I think you said after the game, I did not hear, but Mick said that that's what they were going with.
It's their fist defense, which is basically a 2-2-1 trap.
And it was perfect recognition, perfectly executed. I mean, you swallowed the right guy. You know, Monte Morris, if he caught it with a dribble left, would have split you, and probably then they would have finished with a dunk or finished with him dribbling some more time off the clock and going to the foul line. They swallowed the right guy at the right time. And I think the best part was the execution in that circumstance, because you haven't really had to rep something like that very much because you haven't been in late game situations. A lot of times guys do panic and foul when they shouldn't have fouled. You had plenty of time to get a trap, if not a couple. And I thought they played it really well.
Well, and I thought they kind of disguised it really well as it was unfolding.
Yeah, because they got him right across midcourt.
I mean, boom, they just all of a sudden they went into it. It wasn't something that, you know, they kind of like sat in and gave you a preview that it was coming. They just kind of jumped him. And he had no clue what was, you know, what was headed for his way, and tried to make a desperation pass over two outstretched hands and got the tip and got the ball back and were able to get the tie and go to overtime. It was a huge, huge call by Mick and a huge execution play for the team.
Yeah, I mean, and you see it a lot of times. I think, and Rick, you see that the teams sometimes panic and foul in that circumstance when you have time for a trap or two or at least a little bit of time to try to make a defensive play before you foul, and then you get in the catch-up game. Yeah, a guy can miss the 1-1, but, you know, most, and granted, free throw shooting probably isn't what it used to be, all that stuff, but guys still are decent enough where I wouldn't foul unless I had to foul.
Well, I think it's funny because when you're on the losing side of that, you're freaking out as a coach, and you're like, we've got to do something, but on the other side of it, a lot of times they're doing the same thing.
Correct.
It's a highly pressurized situation for the offense. And quite frankly, the offense has to do a much more complicated process at end-of-game situations in terms of getting open, passing, catching, being on. You just have to run hard, play fast as a defense, and try to get the ball.
Right.
So it's really a situation where I think teams, sometimes you're right, don't try enough to get a steal or get a trap or create the turnover. And you saw UC play that to perfection, really, in a situation where they had to have it. And then even more importantly than that, I think the defense, We've talked about him, I think, on this podcast already, where people are kind of down on Kevin Johnson and railing against him a little bit, and rightfully so. He hasn't been very good at times this year. Last night, you saw his value. I mean, that's a senior, a veteran who's been talked about as a good defender for a while, and people were like, well, how much of a difference does he really make as a defender? You saw at the end of the game last night, he locked up Monte Morris and didn't let him change the game.
And that was the other situation, was the end of the overtime situation, how UC defended that.
Well, Kevin, I don't know if that was a call, like a design, or if Kevin just decided to deny, because you could tell he did a great job stopping Morris when Morris tried to penetrate. He forced him back out, and you could tell Morris was looking for
the handoff,
the hand, a kick, and then a handoff. He was going to give it up, and then get it right back, and try to go back at him. And Kevin just jumped it and denied, and Morris couldn't get the ball back, and Naz Long had to throw up a prayer from 26 feet that was nowhere close.
And whether he did it on his own was smart, or whether, B, it was on the scouting report that said late-game situations, he's deny, not getting it back and deny, and then the kid paid attention to the scouting report, which, as you guys both know, a lot of kids look at the scouting report and they certainly don't pay attention to it very often. So one or the other happened there. Either he did it on his own, was smart, or smart enough to pay attention to the scouting report.
But they came out of the timeout, and Mick said, you know, get in him.
Yeah, right.
Well,
right.
And look, there's not a lot of guys in the country that can stick Monte Morris in that situation.
Right.
We talked last week about how clutch that kid is. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's just a big-time play by your senior. And a guy who had a big game aside from that, too. He had some big baskets on offense, which we haven't seen
from him. Well, he took a terrible shot that he made. I mean, I'll give him
a what are you talking about? That's his shot.
Yeah, that's his game right there.
The step back 19-foot, 7-inch
where you haven't created a centimeter of space from the defender. You haven't shickened him at all before you rise up for that fadeaway 19-footer.
He did have 11 points, and let's face it, you ain't counting on
two huge drives baseline.
Right, right. I mean, and you're not counting on 11 points, really, from a guy like that, and certainly in a setting like that.
And I thought Iowa State did a great job really defending Jacob Evans. They made life pretty difficult for him. I think he needs to be more aggressive.
I think UC needs to find better ways to get him going.
Open,
Look, that's your best player, and it's not close anymore.
Now,
you saw that last night.
They ran a set late for him, and it was perfect.
Awesome.
He executed it perfect.
With 1:30 left, they were down by 4 in regulation. Mick called a timeout. Just created a little movement, got him coming downhill where he's best, and put him in position to succeed.
Because when he elevates in the lane in that, you're not stopping.
And it's going
in. He's skilled, and he's got touch. They have to find ways to do that more when he's not getting himself going during the game. They have to do that before a minute 30 in regulation, you're down by 4. Now he made the bucket and put him down by 2, and then they end up tying it, so it worked out. But, again, find a way to do that earlier.
And, they did it in the end of overtime when he got fouled. That was basically the Sean Kilpatrick play.
Yeah.
You know, get the guy off the bounce, get him off balance. Draw the foul, go to the free throw line, and win the game.
All right, now I'm not crapping on a win because it's a good win and it's a tough place to win.
Take it anytime you can get it.
But one of the things we talked about before the year is this is going to be a different offensive team. Are we going to see more explosion, more ability to score? And we didn't see that last night. Now, sometimes games settle into grind amounts.
It was also a low possession game.
I get it. As I say, sometimes games turn them into grind amounts. But just watching last night at times, it made you go, I've seen this script before.
Kind of, yeah. But I will also say there were also times, especially in the first half, and some in the second half, where they're a completely different team when Kyle Washington is involved and engaged offensively, because he does such a good job passing from the high post, passing block to block, his ability to score. When they've got him going, I think they're that type of offensive team that we've talked about them becoming. And then you get, you know, you add Jacob. I think the thing that's really kind of killing him right now is Troy Copain is just in a horrible shooting slump.
It's a terrible shooting slump.
And if he comes out of that and you have a three-headed monster, and then Gary Clark, I think we saw Gary Clark figure out quite a few things last night about his role and how he can be, you know, the guy that averages a double-double or somewhere up near a double-double. I think they're getting there. They're clearly not there yet. And I'll give Iowa State credit. They were in the top 10 in KenPom coming into the game, defensive efficiency, and I can't imagine they dropped out after that game. I'll give them credit for playing pretty good defense. I think UC made some bad decisions. I think they pass up too many open shots still.
To try to get whatever you think is a better shot, but sometimes it's really not.
In the system that they're running, if they want to run that free-flowing motion offense, watch Xavier run it.
Yeah, you got to take the first good shot.
The first good shot.
Yeah, right.
Goes up.
Yeah, not take the look and go, well, we get a 3-footer. But you got an 8-footer. Take the 8-footer. You got the 15-footer. Take the 15-footer.
But more importantly, I think when UC gets into their struggles, you see it. Like the first half, even when they weren't shooting the ball well or scoring well, they were running through everything. You know, there was pace to their offense. Guys were cutting hard.
Right.
They were running the offense hard. Troy was dribbling fast into
GCL-like.
A handoff. Yeah, very GCL-like. But the thing that you see when they start to struggle is Troy slows to a crawl when he brings it up. They wait 10 seconds to get into their offense. Then it's a slow cut to the next the screen or the dribble handoff. And then
there's eight on the shot clock.
Yeah, exactly. Then it's too much time, and you're going one-on-one with guys that aren't good isolation basketball players, and it puts them at a disadvantage. Just a quick note, the last year's game between these two teams in Cincinnati
was high scoring.
68 possessions in regulation, right? And it was 81-79 or 82-79 or whatever it is. Last night's game, 67 possessions, one less in overtime.
And still only 108 combined.
And the efficiency, way, way, way worse.
Right.
So, I mean, these two teams can theoretically play at the same pace and play much better offensively. They didn't do it last night. And I think, and it wasn't just UC, Iowa State chose to do the same exact thing.
And it
plays to UC's benefit much more than it does to Iowa State.
I'm
sure Mick wasn't upset about that, but it is this interesting thing of like, okay, are they just in the same position where every time they face a good team, they're going to play in the 60s or lower and grind it out to a last possession type game?
Well, remember what happened last year when they played fast in those games. Butler scored up near 80. Iowa State hit 80. And you saw Mick at that point in time
say,
hell with that. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. Now, real quick, before we move on to a couple other things, because we've got a lot to talk about for the weekend. You mentioned Troy Copain's shooting slump. He's 7 for 30 now from 3, and we're now getting to a decent enough sample size. It's 7 games. This isn't like a game or two where you had a bad one.
No.
7 for 30 is a pretty prolonged slump. Is there something you can point to, or is it something you need to walk up there to Clifton here before long and go, hey, what's going on with this?
A lot of it is what we just talked about. He's getting the ball back with 6 seconds on the shot clock
and having to do something. Bad shots, yeah.
You know, there were several times last night where, you know, Evans would get the ball with 10, dribble it to 6, and then throw it back to Troy. And at that point in time, he's got to do, you know.
You know, it's funny. If you look back, and I don't have the stats in front of me, so I'm doing this completely off the top of my head, Nick Van Exel's senior year, when he was obviously the focal point of the offense, I think he shot, I want to say it was not a great note, it was like 39%, 40%, but he threw a lot of shots in when he needed to at the end of a shot clock. And he was a little more capable of doing that, obviously, than Troy Copain is.
Yeah, and I think it's bled over because now he's long on his open shots. I mean, I think it's in his head now.
Right. That stuff can carry over.
He wants to have a great senior year.
Right.
And, you start missing shots, and then it gets in your head, and you start – he had an air ball. He had one that barely nicked the backside of the rim. He just needs to let it come.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, the good part is if you're UC, you're 6-1 with him really not being a force on offense, even close to it, and you expect some at some point he's going to make some shots.
Yeah, that would be a nice thing.
You better hope.
I'm one who doesn't worry. Now, I know he's not like a lights-out shooter, so, you know, you do worry a little more with him, but, like, I'm not a guy who worries as much about a guy with a proven track record
in terms of
we know what he's going to shoot, so he's going to end up hitting that percentage. The nice thing for UC fans is they're playing well. He's not shooting. At some point, when the statistics even themselves out, the percentage is even out, he's going to get hot at some point, so he is going to shoot well. My biggest thing with this is the biggest takeaway from this game is how much this changes. We talked about how much that Rhode Island game could change the feeling and complexion of the season and what the fans are feeling. It didn't work out. This game was even more so that way because you lose this one on like that buzzer beater three. And the refrain from the fan base is same old thing. We can't win a close one.
Can't
all
score.
Of that stuff, and they're justified in feeling that way because the resume would be in a situation where now you've got to go to Hinkle. You've got to win at Hinkle against a team that's playing really, really well that matches up well with you. And it's a frustrating position to be in as a fan. Now you win this game. You get a signature road win on your tournament resume, which you desperately needed, and you have a BS game on Sunday against a bad team,
right.
And then you have a full week to prepare to go to Hinkle, which is only an hour and a half,
feeling good about yourself.
Feeling great about yourself with a chance to get a second huge road win, and now you're looking at a situation where 11-1 non-conference before you hit into AAC play is very, very realistic for this team, and you're in position to play yourself into an elite seed at the end of the year.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's what one win
That's what had to happen.
It
completely changes the feeling of the season for UC and their fan base. And I mean, it's going to make basketball in this town a lot more fun.
And worst case now, they lose a Butler. They're 10-2.
Right.
You're going into AAC.
Yeah, I mean, you're still four trash teams aside from Butler left before
Marshall
you
Marshall is okay.
But like, they're okay. If you see loses to them, though, this isn't the team we think.
Right.
Marshall gave up 88 to Ohio the other night.
Yeah, at home.
At home.
And they won.
Yeah, they did
by scoring 90.
98.
You think they're going to score 98 at home against UC?
No.
Okay. I wouldn't worry about it then, Chief.
I think you're in good shape, my man. All right, let's talk about a couple big games this weekend. UC does play Bowling Green on Sunday, and we may touch on that before then. I know. That's a little nutty. NFL Sunday.
Huge game.
Huge.
Maction.
Huge, yeah. What do you mean? Is that on ESPN3?
I think Rocky Boyman's doing play-by-play or sideline.
Doing sideline.
ESPN8. It's on the Ocho.
Exactly. It's on the Ocho. It should be. But a couple of big games for some folks, for fans area-wise. Start with Xavier and Baylor.
This is going to be fun.
It is going to be fun. This is a big, big game, really for both, but certainly for Xavier. I mean, you get this when you start to solidify yourself and put yourself in position as this season rolls along to say, come knock us off.
Yeah, but, I mean, can you imagine if Baylor picks up this
Absolutely.
One, too? Their resume is ridiculous.
It
is.
They're gunning for a one seed that went up.
They're solidifying themselves for a one seed this early in the year.
And he'll still figure out a way to screw it up. But go ahead.
you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right about that. But, I mean, it is a huge game for both teams. The biggest thing for Xavier is it presents, like right now, if you look at the Big East, you've got those four teams playing really, really well, including Butler, the three top ten teams, and then Butler. And Xavier probably has the least impressive resume. We just talked about this on our podcast the other night. You win this, all of a sudden you probably have the most impressive resume out of the Big East teams. Baylor just presents some things Xavier hasn't seen yet, which is mostly two good big men. Well, one really good big man and another big man that's 7 foot and athletic, which resides length and rim protection and rebounding that they just haven't had to go against yet. And obviously there are still some question marks with the bigs. So how they defend Jonathan Motley, a 6'10", 230-pound athletic scorer, and how they combat Luol Achiu in the lane with his rebounding and shot blocking will be difficult. It's unfortunate we don't have African name pronunciation expert Brian Snow on the podcast.
Is he good with those?
He's an expert. Just ask him.
Is he really good at it?
I mean, it's Brian Snow from Ohio who now lives in Indianapolis pronouncing African names. So how good can he be?
A lot of them really and truly are. I've told people this when I do games and go ask pronunciations of coaches, and if there's no
most of the time they're wrong.
If it's they're wrong 1,000% of the time, but a lot of times this is true. Inner city versus ethnic white guy pronunciations. Inner city, a lot of times, honestly, it is phonetically perfect to the letter.
Yeah.
And then you look at these other guys and you go, how do you pronounce that? And it is completely the other way. So
this podcast getting into demographics and name pronunciations is a wild term.
It's true. It's absolutely true, though. Hey, speaking of the resume, I do want to touch on Baylor for those who may not know. 17-point win over Oregon. A 9-point win over a Florida Gulf Coast team that almost beat Michigan State. They also have a win over Michigan State. They also have a win over Louisville. They also have a win over VCU. It has been a really, really good start for them. They played Sam Houston and Oral Roberts, and other than that, it's been pretty formidable what they faced so far.
Oral Robert.
Yeah, the Oral Bobby. They've played some really...
Let me digress for a second. Do you know that I actually played basketball on the Maybe Center Court when I was a fifth grader at Oral Roberts?
Go ahead and explain.
There you go. I used to live in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Where didn't you live? I'm finding all types of new things about your history.
I
thought you were Cuban.
My grade school.
Yes.
I am deep in my history. But no, my fifth grade team got a chance to play at halftime of a Southern Illinois Oral Roberts game. Southern Illinois had a guy that played – actually, two guys that played in the NBA. Mike Glenn that played for the Hawks and Joe C. Merriweather that played for the Knicks.
Did you meet Oral Bob?
I did not. I saw Oral Bob that night, though.
You saw Bob getting oral, or you saw Oral Bob?
Well, it depends on what you want to think there, my friend.
You were about that age.
That's where I went. Huh?
Fifth grade?
What are they doing up in the suite, Mommy?
So this was like when they bring the
little guys.
Special education kids out at halftime to play?
That's correct. Okay. The best part was my first shot, I hit the back of the rim, then I got fouled. My first free throw hit the side of the back, or hit the backboard, like straight on, hit it to the right, hit the rim to the right, and then I did swish the second one. The first one was just horrible. I threw it up there, clank, clank, clank. Second one swish.
You were clearly distracted.
I was. With
what you had seen.
Bob up there.
He was in the backdrop. He was getting on me. So there you go.
We got off the rails.
Yeah, Bob getting topped off, and I'm just worried about Baylor's 2-3 zone. Yeah,
exactly.
Jonathan Motley.
So I just figured I'd just drop a little Oral Roberts knowledge on you. There you go. Continue.
I don't even know where to go after that.
How about some distractions for Baylor?
The 2-3 zone, I think, is the other big thing about this. Xavier hasn't – this Baylor team is really good defensively, and they play this weird 2-3 zone. They're very aggressive with it.
I mean, they really frustrated Louisville in the second half. And Louisville had them down, and Louisville did nothing offensively in the second half.
And they really extended out – like, they're keeping teams from shooting threes.
It's not a matchup. As much as it's like extended
morphing zone.
Yeah.
They really move around
in
it.
But the length helps them a ton.
Absolutely.
A ton.
That's the key to it. And they do a great job of recovering to the perimeter. Now, the thing is, you get some threes. It's not like you don't get three looks against this zone, but you better make the ones you get, because other than that, it's tough to get inside of it. It's tough to score at the rim because of their length and rim protection. And then, obviously, they're having to rebound out of the zone. So that's somewhere where Xavier, a pretty good offensive rebounding team, might be able to make up some points there. But again, not easy against those guys from Baylor. I do wonder, I go back to UC's matchup zone 2 years ago. You remember kind of the game plan at the fifth third where Miles Davis and D. Davis were
trying to walk away from D. Davis? Yeah,
well,
I remember that.
That, but also the overload in the corner. In the first half, Miles Davis hit those three corner threes on that overload play. I'm betting we see something very similar from Xavier here, where they try to overload a side of the zone, because Baylor's forwards rise up really high on the wings.
Iowa State did something similar last night, and basically the easiest way to accomplish it is you set the ball screen at the top of the key, and you make them switch.
Yeah, and you bring that forward up on the wing.
You bring a forward up on the wing and then put somebody in the corner.
And then he's got a shot.
When you pass to the wing, the guy on the bottom has to come up and guard the wing, and then you pass to the corner, and it's wide open, and it works almost every time.
But you got to make that shot.
Yeah, and that's the big thing. And Xavier, you know, they've got two guys kind of right now that you see as their shooters, Trayvon Blewett and J.P. McCure, that are on the floor. Kaiser Gates helps that depend on how much he plays, which to this point hasn't been a lot. And Trayvon Blewett hasn't been shooting well. So Xavier needs to make those shots. It's no guarantee they do at their first real road environment here this year. The other way I think they combat that is by getting Edmund Sumner into the middle. He's with his length and his passing ability, he's very good at working the middle of zones. So I expect him to kind of do that. Maybe you have to play Quentin Gooden with him a little bit to accomplish that.
In the middle, playing the middle or driving?
Driving?
No, catching.
Playing the middle of the zone is like you would bring a big man to the free throw line. They've done that
before. He's got the size and the length.
That's,
I mean, it's an interesting.
He's got a decent floater where if you don't turn around, he's quick. He'll just lay it up over your big man. But he's also, you know, can quick enough and handles well enough in
to get to a short corner.
Right, to get to a spot and make a play in there.
Yeah, it helps to have a guy like that. You mentioned really first true road game. How much does that factor in?
Oh, I mean, it factors in tremendously, especially when you're playing against a good team that has a fairly tough environment to play at, which Baylor certainly does. A lot of times it affects your shooting, and it affects your defensive intensity. So with this team, I don't worry as much about the defensive intensity, especially what we've seen in the last two games. I think they come out, and they're ready to play, and they're confident, and they're fired up. But it would greatly concern me with their shooting, and then also maybe turnovers on offense if they're a little shook up by seeing the zone for the first time and feeling that environment.
This is obviously a big stretch. How much do you have to avoid the whole concept of looking at the whole stretch and not biting it into small chunks? Because really, I mean, this game comes, and then very quickly, to some degree, the Colorado game comes by the time you get back home and then have to make that trip back out there. I mean, you're going Texas, Colorado. I mean, that's a little tough of a swing.
It is. I think with college athletes, and it's probably the same way with professional athletes, but college athletes are like robots in this sense. Like, they legitimately, when they say that one game at a time stuff,
it's true. It's so cliche, but they are
programmed that way. They don't get the scouting report of another team. They don't see video from another team. These kids aren't going home and watching basketball all week.
The pressure's on the coaches to get the turnaround stuff right.
Yeah, coaches may start looking ahead, but players really do not look ahead. When fans say that, it doesn't happen, because they are creatures of habit, and they only give what they're given because they've got too much on their plates as it is, and it's only one game at a time type stuff. So they won't be looking ahead and lose to Baylor because they're looking ahead. Right. But
I'm just talking about just looking at the stretch as a whole, though, from our perspective.
It does get very difficult, because you do get fatigued when you're traveling and stuff like that. So the next game in this road trip will certainly matter and make it more difficult.
And we'll talk more about that.
Two questions. Are they staying out, or are they coming back here and going back out there?
I haven't asked that 100% either way, but I think they're coming back. But.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, because it's an afternoon game Saturday. You can get back here Saturday night, right? And then you have a Sunday to get back in. You can go to class on Monday. You can leave on Tuesday.
And it's a Wednesday game?
It's a Wednesday game.
Okay, yeah, they would be coming home.
And we're worried about student-athletes here more. And so getting them to class on Monday is the most important thing.
Yeah, that's critical.
No question.
What I think people don't realize when you talk about, you know, preparation and things like that, like – coaches are assigned scouts.
Correct.
Yeah. So, you know, they know going into this stretch, you've got, you know, Pegues has this game and Travis Steele has this game and, you know, Luke Murray has the third game and it's straight.
And they're all working on it.
Yeah.
As time goes on. Yeah.
It's not like they're shifting focus like, oh my God, no, okay, we're done with this one, but we're still trying to, you know, this one's coming up. We're still trying to focus on that one. No, this is Pegues' scout.
And
it's his responsibility
for two weeks.
That's what he's been doing.
Right. Been looking at tape. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So I don't think the casual fan realizes.
No, they assume the head coach is doing all of that.
The whole let's turn the page thing isn't real. That doesn't happen. They've been focusing on that team for 2 weeks. One assistant has.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Another big game, obviously, to talk about is Kentucky and UCLA. We talked a little bit about UCLA. In depth.
100 each.
I don't see UCLA getting 100 on.
Because Kentucky will defend.
If UCLA gets 100, Kentucky will get 130 because that means they're just staying.
possessions.
Correct. And I'm not here to tell you I think Kentucky wins by 30. But if they give up 100, they're getting 130 because it'll be a track meet.
I will say, though, it'll be interesting to see in this situation because this team hasn't really played an opponent like that.
Correct.
You're still playing with young guys. Do they get caught up in the... It's AAU ball.
Basketball, right? No, and that's
and let's go.
And that's a legitimate question. Do you think that can happen?
I do. The thing is, if it happens, it's what we just said. UCLA will do the exact same thing because that's already how they want to play.
Yeah.
UCLA, by the way, is averaging 97 a game. Kentucky's averaging 96,
just
for the record.
And if they play that way, UK will score 130. So if it does get into AAU ball, that benefits UK more than anything. I'm just excited. We talked about Lonzo Ball versus Markelle Fultz last week and who's better there. Not that they played each other, but we were just talking about the debate.
Right.
Where does De'Aaron Fox stand out of the debate? Because he's been outrageously good through the start of the season. And we're going to see Lonzo Ball go against De'Aaron Fox in this game. I mean, that's from an NBA scouting perspective, that's as good as
it gets. Fox guards him?
Yeah. I mean, they'll move multiple guys on him.
Ball's 6'9", right? 6'8"?
I don't think he's that bad. I would say 6'6".
I think 6'5", 6'6". I mean, so your physical dimensions of Lonzo Ball. Last week you told us he wasn't athletic, and I went and pulled about 16 oops of him just destroying bodies.
I explained that further as we got into it.
I know. Brian Snow agreed with you. I told him he was an idiot too. But.
maybe you might be the idiot in this one. Usually you're not. Usually you're the voice of reason.
I've sent Snow the highlights.
Lonzo Ball is listed officially, whether you believe it, he's listed at 6'6".
So okay.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That's closer.
I do think De'Aaron Fox guards him. And either way, I mean, just seeing these two go up against each other in the same game. But what about the fact? I mean, I know it's not UCLA. But
I think
UK
we see Briscoe on him personally a lot.
UK was supposed to play a good ASU team earlier this week.
Arizona State stunk.
They were horrible.
And I think Asbury gave UK a better challenge earlier this year when UK beat them by 100.
No, they were bad.
Putrid.
It was.
I mean,
it was a 38-point game by the first media timeout of the second half.
Yeah.
Well, Herb.
It's not going well for Bobby out there.
Well, Herb didn't leave Bobby a whole lot either, so that didn't help.
But he's been there a couple years.
And it's his guys now.
It's getting close to his guys.
There was no floor slapping, I would assume, in that.
If you slap the floor and give up 115, he's better stop slapping the floor, man.
We also have to mention De'Aaron Fox recorded the triple-double, 14, 11, and 10. Zip it for a second. Craziest stat I've heard in a while. Second guy, Chris Mills in 1988 was the only other guy in UK history to have a triple double. So let me hear it. What is the best? Wait, blank. This guy didn't have a triple double at UK. Anthony Davis is mine.
Mashburn.
That Mashburn would be a good one because of the style of play. You would think he'd certainly get the points. John Wall.
Dan Issel.
Dan Issel wasn't a passer. Dan Issel,
but blocks. I mean,
he wasn't a great shot block guy either. He averaged
a double double for 3 years.
He did, but he was a scorer. He played a lot of his. He was a big perimeter guy. Believe it or not, he scored a lot on the perimeter. He was more of a scorer, rebounder. For him to, I can see him. He averaged 33 and 15, I think, 1 year.
Yeah.
So, but not blocks. He didn't get off the floor a whole lot. Believe it or not, he had a little bit of the coach's son's.
Yeah, business. he was a high IQ guy,
yes,
scrappy,
correct,
deceptive athlete.
Correct.
Yeah.
This is a really good question.
Derek Anderson, maybe?
Derek Anderson's a good one for, again, because he could
assist
run the floor
guy.
Long. Another guy from back, Dwight Anderson, who was a 6'3 guard back in the late 70s, early 80s, ended up transferring to USC. He was a scorer, rebounder, assist guy.
Here's a fairly modern
Antoine
guy.
Antoine Walker?
You. That was one I thought about because of his passing ability.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were talking about his turnovers. No. I thought he would get a chance.
Tayshaun Prince.
Tayshaun Prince is a good one for
you. He could have got blocks or steals.
Or assists.
He could have been a quadruple-double guy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Really he was one of the most versatile guys.
He really was.
Anthony Davis both could have popped a quadruple at one point.
Anthony Davis would have done it had he played more than a year. Obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, I think.
And if he played more minutes.
Yeah, that's the other thing. He played on a great team.
Yeah, it is funny to think in the history of that program that this was just the second guy to ever get
it's outrageous
triple-double.
To think. Miles Davis has a triple-double. How does no one else in UK history other than Chris Mills have a triple-double?
I think Cal's holding these guys back, man.
And that was a bad Kentucky team, too. I mean, so.
Actually, there's a little bit of truth to that because there's so many one-and-dones in the Cal era that a lot of the great guys in the last few years, you go, yeah, but he only played his freshman year and he was on a really talented team.
Tubby's teams didn't have enough possessions. Rick was playing 15 guys. Yeah. So, you can trickle all the way through to maybe get to that point. So Kenny Walker's another one. Kenny Walker could have been a points, rebounds, block shot guy, steals guy even. So that's a great question. I like it.
Good job, Rick.
Well done, Rick.
I'm just here coming up with content, guys. I don't know what you're doing.
That was great. I really appreciate that.
I'm really proud of you for that.
Did both of you get a chance to watch IU and Carolina? Your team redeemed itself.
That defensively is – when they play like that, they are damn near impossible to beat.
It was funny.
They smothered North Carolina.
I had a friend of mine. I think the line for that game was Carolina was actually a 5-point favorite on the road. And he said, how is that possible? He goes, even though Carolina I thought was better, he goes, how is that possible? I said, trust me, Vegas is so smart. Vegas knows that fans saw one thing, a loss to IPFW, yep. And they assumed that, okay.
And they made mass.
Oh, I guarantee you. I didn't see what the line finished out at. I really didn't pay any attention to it. I just knew what I saw that morning. I looked at it and went, wow, that's a pretty good number, and wow, at home, and Indiana's a pretty good team still, and not like they didn't need the five, they never needed. Looked like for a while they might, pee the lead away because down the straight part of that second half they were struggling, but really they were never in danger of that. To be honest with you,
I really don't think there's a pair of bigs in the country that are as good together as OG Anunoby and Thomas Bryant.
Yeah, you might not be wrong about
and
that. That's
I heard it in the game, and I almost flipped out. Man, this Thomas Bryant kid really plays hard. And it was my biggest pet peeve maybe since we've ever been on the AAU circuit is what was his name? Went to Kansas last year. Shek Diallo. Shek Diallo and Thomas Bryant played on the same team. Thomas Bryant played harder than Shek Diallo every game. In every game, every scout came out every time. My God, Shek Diallo is such a high motor guy. Best motor in this class. Such a blah, 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 blah.
Because here's the thing about national AAU tournaments. One national guy that's popular on social media tweets something.
Or sees 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever minutes.
And tweets something.
Right.
And then every other national writer goes and writes the same thing when he watches the kid.
It becomes
the trendy thing to do. Oh, wow. Shek Diallo, I saw him too, and he really is.
But you watched those games, a couple of those games with me, and we both walked away. We're driving in the car going, Thomas Bryant plays harder than Shek Diallo.
And I love Shek Diallo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But those two together, Anunoby's going to be out, I think, a couple games with an ankle injury.
He did roll.
But they give them something I don't really think anybody else in the country has in terms of we're seeing great guard play this year.
Right.
They give them a dominating force in the middle. And Bryant, offensively, man, he's out banging threes now on a regular basis. Did you see the pump fake three baseline?
I
mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That kid's 6'11", 260 pounds, and he's pump faking threes and driving baseline for a finish. Like, when they're playing like that, and the question with them is going to be, and this becomes a problem in the tournament, why can't they play like that away from Assembly Hall?
Right.
Yeah. Well, that and just in terms of, like, the immediate.
Because you're going to have to do it 9 times in the Big Ten.
Right.
Yeah.
And 6 times to win a title.
Right.
4 to get to a Final Four.
Exactly.
Right now, in terms of where they're at, obviously, we talked about the Fort Wayne game and how that matters so much to Fort Wayne, but it really will not matter at all to Indiana as long as they take care of business. Guess what? It doesn't matter anymore.
It doesn't come close to mattering.
It doesn't matter anymore, and that's why it is awesome that Indiana played that game.
Agreed.
Because it played out exactly how we expected. Now, in terms of where Indiana's at, huge win. You've got 3 games against trash opponents for OG to get healthy, and then you've got to play Butler on a neutral.
That's going to be fun.
And here's the
is
thing.
Is that the doubleheader? Is that?
Yeah. Banker's Life.
Yeah.
And here's the thing about Indiana, which we've already seen. If OG isn't healthy, they're a completely different team.
I mean, that kid, and you talk about under the radar kids. I never heard that kid's name until he committed to Indiana.
Yeah, I didn't know him.
I mean, it just completely came from out of nowhere. And I think he was still growing towards the end of the recruiting process. 6'8 now. Incredible body. Great athleticism. Yeah. I mean, he is an elite defender at 6'8. Can guard, you know, probably five positions. I mean, I wouldn't have a problem with him guarding 90% of the centers in college basketball right now. He just makes them so versatile and so dangerous. And you know, they clearly were better without James Blackman against North Carolina. Clearly.
That would be so. You may have to start a trend. Better without – better W.O. Blackman.
Actually, just make a Twitter account that says, was Indiana better without James Blackman today? And then just tweet yes or no after every game.
Exactly. I like that. All right. Final take from you, Chad Brendel.
Oh, man. I didn't really overly prepare for this one. I was so excited.
Well, what about this? What are you most excited to see out of Saturday? We've got 12:30, number 11 UCLA at number 1 UK. 2 p.m., you have number 25 West Virginia at number 6 Virginia.
Yep.
3:30, you have number 7 X at number 9 Baylor. And 5:30, you have number 8 Gonzaga at number 15 Arizona. Oh, no, I'm sorry, at the Staples Center, not at Arizona.
I'm going to say yes.
All of them? You'll take all of them? Not a bad day to be on the couch?
Not a bad day to be on the couch. And I think my wife and daughter were talking about going and doing something.
See ya. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm going to go yes.
You need me to put gas in the car tonight?
I'm going
to
go yes. That is my hot take for this Friday. Is tomorrow's basketball action is a yes.
And that includes some conference football championship games a couple of weeks ago.
I could care less about that at this point of the year. So mine is, I said it on the last podcast, Drew McDonald is really good.
Yes, he is.
That's a big 30, win.
32 against Moorhead, is that right?
32 and 11 rebounds. And here's the more impressive thing, Skinny. He did it on 12 of 14 shooting.
So 14 shots. Hang on. 14 shots got him 32 points.
32 That's points.
Pretty damn efficient.
And he did everything. He dominated dudes in the post, just bullied them into the two big little midline hooks.
Personally, I'm happy for him because I've known him. So we've all known him for a long time. I've known him even from the golf circuit. And, you know, his body type, he needed to fix that. He needed to slim himself down a little bit.
And everybody thought it was going to be impossible for him to do it.
I thought it was going to. Honestly, I was one of them. I thought he'd be a nice college player because he had some skill and you could see the skill. But, I mean, he is really morphing into a really good player.
As a sophomore.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big win to go down to Moorhead State. I mean, yes, they're in some flux right now, but
it's NKU going to win at Moorhead 84-79. I mean, here's the situation. We talked about them killing off Miami's program. They're coming for Eastern Kentucky and Western Kentucky and Moorhead right now, too, in this state.
I don't know about the Western Kentucky part. We'll slow down on that
one. Well, they're going to be on probation in a year and a half, Skinny.
That is possible.
It's probable.
Slick Rick is getting him some players where it makes you scratch your head, but you're right. Go ahead.
Didn't Eastern Kentucky beat Western this weekend?
I'd have to look. I'm going to tell you that
this week.
That one was not on my radar. I'd be stunned if they did, but I'm not calling you a liar either.
You pull that up, but I will say that just this NKU team, I know people probably, there's not a whole lot of people listening that are interested in them, but they continue to be just a really fun team to watch. They play fast offensively. They play well offensively. They have nothing but young guys. They're only going to lose one player after this year, and that's a 6'7 white spot up shooter.
And apparently we have a great halftime promotion that we have to go to again, right?
And there's free beers at halftime.
That's the key.
If you're not watching this team, you are missing out on good basketball. The interesting thing to me, they're 3-1 now away from home, 1-2 at home.
Yeah, and
during the start.
And one of the losses to North Carolina Central, which, again, if you look back at them.
Followed up with a win over Missouri, by the way.
Exactly
I told
right.
you.
That's look, exactly right.
Lavelle Moton knows what he's doing.
You are right, by the way. Eastern did beat. Eastern beat Western 78-59. Holy cow.
Hey.
Holy
NKU Toledo. Might be the third best team in Kentucky.
It might be.
I'm telling you, they're coming for everyone in the state.
Because I have to be honest with you, Eastern ain't the best either.
I mean, they ain't coming for Louisville.
And Louisville. I forget Louisville is in Kentucky. People forget that.
You shouldn't forget that.
Yeah.
People forget that. That's good working that one in.
Yeah, thanks. Very well done. All right, anything else, boys? We good?
That's all I got.
Fantastic. I'm on 4 hours of sleep right now. So
I bet you are.
What a tough guy over there, just toughing it out.
Hey, I'm a basketball guy.
I only counted three coughs. How many did you count?
I had honestly I think the black lung was filling up my ears to where I've got a little head cold going on. I can't even hear.
You don't know what's going on.
I mean, there was a chimney going on in my office last night. Yeah, surprise. Close game, down to the wire. Might have burned through a few.
What color was that smoke? We got a new Pope or what?
You do. His name's Mick Cronin. There you go. All right, fellas. Appreciate it. We will be back on Monday to talk about this big weekend of college basketball. Don't forget, we have our podcast up every Monday and Friday. Jed DeMusi and I do a Bengals podcast as well during the week, so make sure you catch it at local12.com and catch these guys' work, Chad Brendel at Bearcat Journal and Rick Roaring at musketeerreport.com.
And go Norse.com.
Actually, NKUNorse.com.
Come and see me when they win it.
Guaranteed. Come see me when they win it.